Friday, 6th July, 1979. Atma and Brahman, names for realized transcendence, fill the Upanishads. In the beginning, this world was Atma alone in man form. The Sanskrit is Purusha Veda. Purusha, man, Veda, form. Looking around, he saw nothing other than Atma. He said first, I am. Thus arose the name I. As it stands, it's not specially intelligent, as the words stand. How could Atma, which is transcendence, totality, the absolute, the one total reality, and so forth, how can that look around? When we say look around, the deeps of our minds are so dominated by our sense experience of sight that we immediately, unconsciously do this, looking around. Nothing of the sort. What is the meaning of looking around? And in the beginning, this, they only use the word this, they don't say world, world is in brackets, that's implied, was Atma alone in man form, Purusha Veda. Looking around, he saw nothing other than Atma. He said first, I am, thus arose the name I. It's perfectly obvious that this expresses the individual who is in the supreme state of communion possible to any living being like you or I. It's in that supreme state of communion where awareness is realized as total being, discriminative consciousness, which differentiates this from that, has been completely transcended. This is in the supreme meditative state. When the supreme meditative state is not achieved or attained by any man, howsoever holy, howsoever perfect, because of his holiness, his wholeness, his perfection, which means the absence of any obstruction to that primordial creative energy which is transcendence, he is able to be the instrument through which something happens which is totally indescribable. Now, when that something happens, it will happen over a period of time. It may last a minute, an hour, a day, 7 days at a stretch, without that person moving from where he is. The great mystics who have written of their experiences of this mystic union, you should study them as much as you possibly can. You'll begin to understand then what it is all about. Up to about 7 days is the norm, is the ultimate. Then the body's necessities, food, movement, digestion, excretion, etc., etc., all assert themselves. And therefore, that living being, that living person has to emerge out of that state into ordinary consciousness, everyday consciousness. You see? Now, this is the sort of way, and there are several expressions similar to this, the sort of way in which those old teachers affirmed their I'm up against a difficulty. I was going to say their own realization of transcendence. It's the other way about. It's transcendence which realizes itself. When they emerge back into ordinary discriminative consciousness and the senses function, if there is to be any communication about this kind of event which takes place, then it must of necessity be restricted by all our sense functioning, all our thought, every single thought, feeling and verbal formulation is confined within this sphere. The sight images, the oral impressions, the tactile impressions, etc., and the inward process when the brain plays about with its card index of concepts and produces what we call an abstract statement of a philosophical nature. So, do we realize that? We must really, really get that. Otherwise, we will be continuously misleading ourselves, where above all, the living of the religious life, and secondarily, any sort of intelligent penetration into the truths of Scripture are concerned. We are completely dominated, completely limited here in our ordinary discriminative consciousness and in our sense functioning by the fact that the senses will produce limited forms, a limited number of forms in which to express. Now, faculty of speech does the synthesizing of all our sense impressions. But this is the marvel and mystery of man, that he, through allowing the whole psychophysical organism to become completely quiet, and it can become quiet, enter the silence and stillness only if there is complete purity of the psyche. Unless there is the basis of perfect morality all through the day, every day. See, this we must clearly understand. The brain cannot penetrate into transcendent reality. It has its job. It is the material apparatus which, if completely purified, enables this transcendent energy to make and impress upon the living psychophysical organism. Then later on, depending upon the type of person one is, especially if one has the capacity for clear-sighted, sane, rational thought, giving the best possible expression in thought and therefore in speech, then thought and speech comes out. But look at this thought, look at this verbal formulation, how difficult it is. People reading this just don't understand what on earth they are talking about. So you see, if one reads it literally, one thinks, one projects a thought out of the brain, Atma, oh, the absolute all, the eternal, the immortal, just words, words, words. There is no living, vibrant reality about it. When you are truly conscious, you are that which you are conscious of. And when you are that which you are conscious of, then you don't have to remember it, you don't have to call it up in mind, as we say. It is there, perfectly natural, perfectly spontaneous, and your thought, feeling, speech and action just unconsciously expresses that. You see, the tendency of the mass of people in the world to worship the founder of their religion is a perfectly normal tendency, and it's right, because the great spiritual teachers who had realized, who were the first fruits of our humanity, were the supreme expressions of transcendence through man, which is possible to the human race. So that is what that single peculiar statement in the Upanishads means, and that's only the start. And you see the type of expression in language here, looking around. Strictly speaking, being totally aware of, being totally aware of totality has no meaning for us. But if you are totally aware of totality, the only implication that we can formulate is that there is no sense whatsoever of otherness, of separateness. The unity of the universe is an absolute fact. You don't have to prove it, you don't have to seek it. It is there. You don't have to prove or seek space. Space is a wonderful teacher. It is perhaps one of the most wonderful teachers in our ordinary life here and now. You see, it's like that. It's a matter of course. Of course there is space, we see. So that becomes an of course-ness for the being, the living person, the psychophysical living person who has become such, the completely full-fledged human. In Christian terminology, and the manhood was taken up into the Godhead. If you look at, again, the marvelous first chapter of Genesis, and Elohim said, let us create man in our own living likeness. That's my translation. The English translation ordinarily given, I think, is rather misleading. And let us make man in our own image. Making implies separation, otherness, finitude, different things. But Elohim, God, the Absolute, is eternal, infinite, immortal, never makes anything. Nothing mechanically synthesized. There's creation there. We don't know creation in that sense. We know it because we are it only in that supreme state of consciousness, which is unconscious. See? Now, the term Atma is the subjective term the Upanishads use. I ask the question, who am I? And if you ever reach the full fruition answering that question, who am I? The word is Atma, as they called it. One of the meanings of Atma is the eater up of the mind. At is from the root, at meaning to eat, and man, mind, or man. Later on in the book I give a pretty clear explanation of why the two different words were used, and why therefore it is the eater up, the Atma is the eater up of the mind of the individual. The separateness is clean out. All right. Now, then, man is transcendence thinking. I've put man in capital letters, M, capital M, capital A, capital N. This is the primordial man spoken of in the great religions, which represents the logos, the creative word, which represents the thought in the mind of God, as the Hermetic teachings put it. Now here is the value of studying all these other things, because they link up remarkably. This is called the divine Poimandra, Poimandris in Greek, the shepherd of men. And here is the disciple who is in a deep state of consciousness. When he comes out of it, he writes all this, but presents it in the form of the divine dialogue. This was the form they all used. It was the most convenient way of expressing these things, the divine dialogue. There was no other creature or being called God or one of the angels or archangels who suddenly flapped down and spoke to this fellow in his own language. Nothing of the sort. It's what happens to you in your own deepest states of consciousness. And that's what the scriptures try to convey to us. And the other supreme thing the scriptures try to convey to us is the psychology of the completely purified psyche, in addition to the psychology which the world at large calls psychology. The psychology of the sick, the ill psyche. And all the great spiritual teachers who were doctors, they were healers of the sick psyche. That was their business. That's what they had to do. Because they had realized that wonderful state of purity, absolute purity, they themselves, ordinary men, who had been through the tribulations of the sick psyche, had become completely purified, and now they were faced with something which was the inexpressible. The utterly purified psyche is no longer just your personal psyche only. It is your psyche, but because it is rooted in your own material body, brain, nerves, ductus glands, and all that sort of thing, You see? But by becoming the completely purified psyche, it is no longer in the mortal state, it has become the immortal. We have talked about this, you remember, when we have talked about the Greek myth of Eros and Psyche. When the nuptials of Psyche and Eros are finally consummated, Psyche, because of her purification, is conferred immortality, because the mortal cannot wed an immortal. See, these are wonderful, deep and marvelous things. Now, this is what the Hermetic writings say. They call God the mind. God, the All-Father mind. Because the moment you start talking of God or mind in these terms, you are already at the secondary stage, at least, if not the tertiary. Something other than the one primordial, original, absolute, of which no words can be said, no thoughts can be thought. So, the statement comes, and God the mind, being male and female both. You remember in Genesis, and Elohim said, let us create man in our living likeness. And the next verse says, male, female made he them. That means Elohim himself or itself is positive, negative, male, female. See? All right. God the mind, being male and female both, as light and life. Just as in yoga and in Hindu teachings, you have the two words, akasha and prana. Those of you who have studied your yoga writings carefully will come across this. Akasha and prana. They are a not two. They are only a way of talking in terms of the positive aspect of reality interacting with the negative aspect of reality. We talk in these terms simply because we have no option in the matter. We know about positive and negative magnetic charges and electricity and male and female and all the rest of it. We know about all that, and so we can talk only in those terms. You see the restrictions of the mind. But this creative activity of the entire universe is a one thing which is so one, O-N-E, which is so one that it is utterly indescribable, in fact. And yet you can somehow sense it. Don't deceive yourselves that, oh yes, I sense this, I experience that. There are too many of us, especially in Europe and America, who are constantly deceiving themselves that they have seen, they have understood. They haven't begun to see or understand. If they did, they would never have any vested interest in anything whatsoever. They would never exploit anything whatsoever for personal benefit, personal gain, or hold that out as a carrot to attract people to their particular ism or whatever it is. All selfness would be completely out. And that is absolute. Has to be absolute. Otherwise, yes, another leaf dropped from the tree, and that's the end of it. As light, so God the mind, being male and female both, as light and life, brought forth another mind to give things form. Now, it goes on. But All-Father mind, being life and light, did bring forth man, with a capital M, co-equal to himself, with whom he fell in love as being his own child. For he was beautiful beyond compare, the image of his sire. In very truth, God fell in love with his own form. Form here meaning, I think in modern English, it is better to say living likeness. And on him did bestow all his own formations, meaning all his own creative powers. Now, God, all Father mind, brought forth all this. Therefore, mind in its actuality, as far as we can go, as deeply as we can go, has to be understood as an archetypal expression of the one primordial creative energy. There are several archetypal expressions, but mind is that archetypal form which brings forth cosmos into being. That's why I read that previous page, as well as man. Now this man, who is called in the Hermetic writings the thought in the mind of God, the thought in the divine mind, is the creative word, the logos, which gives rise to the world as you and I see it and experience it. Therefore, because it is always subject to the manner in which you and I can see it and express it, it is always for us in man form. Now you'll understand the Upanishadic statement, or the Kabbalistic tree of life, which is represented as a man. It is also represented as a man. All the formations, you know, the Ein Sof, the infinite, and the which brings forth the mystical no-thing, out of which emerge all the different emanations of Ein Sof. Wisdom, Chokhma, intelligence, Bina, Hesed, mercy, Gebura, judgment, etc., etc. All ten, you see, they all come into being. And they are represented in man form, because we cannot escape the inevitable limitation imposed upon us by the fact that you and I are human beings, members of this particular species called man. Hence, in man form. My goodness, I thought I was going to do much more than this in the time we have spent here, but that's how it is. So, I put it this way. Man is transcendence thinking. Not discursive talking, not form-making in our worldly sense. This thinking is instantaneous creating. Again, take Genesis, and God said, and there was what he said. This is mind, this archetypal form of the one primordial creative energy in action. And its action is not in terms of space and time, it's in terms of eternity. Which means that creative action in eternity releases into manifestation simultaneously space, time, matter. One doesn't precede the other. Precedence can come only if there is time already. In eternity, where is precedence. What precedes what? In fact, there is no finitude in the eternal and the immortal. Therefore, there cannot be other things. People ask, but how did it do it? I don't know. We can only talk in our manner. And talking in our manner, all the words I can use are just these. That by self-constriction, that absolute unity becomes the multifarious, the multitudinous many. But you see, that many, though that many does not mean countless number of separate things which are not in complete relationship. It does mean that all of them are in total and complete relationship, which I, as the ordinary mortal, cannot conceive of, cannot see because of my limitations, but which is absolutely there. That's why the unity of the universe is maintained. So, that is the kind of thinking on the part of transcendence or Brahman or God or whatever word you like to use. It is instantaneous creating which releases cosmos out of the primordial state of vibrant quiescence. I use the word vibrant because it is alive. Life is eternal, immortal. That is why in the Chandogya Upanishad, it said quite openly, Brahman is prana, life. Brahman is the infinite, kha. Brahman is bliss, kham. This creative activity is bliss. And of course, what do we mortals immediately think of? Oh, wonderful state of joy and happiness and delight and all the rest of it. Everything that we think in those terms is nonsense. It has nothing to do with what we call pleasure and joy and happiness and ecstasy and all the rest of it. Nothing to do, is it? When somehow or other the sense of transcendence awakens in you even once, and it really awakens even once, then it will act time and again, depending on how we live here and now, whether we live purely self-concerned, self-oriented, self-interested, self-indulgent or not. So you see what it means to try and study the scriptures. Now, this thinking is instantaneous creating. Power, action. Here, now. This is how we can talk in our limited terms of space-time matter. In terms of eternity, immortality and infinity, no one can talk, no one can think. Not even the perfected holy ones. Quite impossible. But all we can do is to use thoughts and words which are less and less misleading. If I've said this once, I've said it 100 times already or more. But it has to go home. Does it go home? Because if it really went home, your whole mode of life would undergo a complete transformation. Otherwise, the mode of life betrays hypocrisy on the part of the individual. His interest in religion then is in fact only a superficial pleasure drive finding its satisfaction, intellectual pleasure. nice sublime feelings, was floating up in the air with beautiful thoughts and all the rest of it, which is all humbug. Make no mistake about it. You know, I'm suddenly reminded of one thing in the discourses of the Buddha, where he talks about those who are truly devoted to him and who really seek the holy life, who really try to live the holy life. And the Buddha says, the gist of it is just this. He says, I will never hesitate to reprove you when I see that you are making a mistake. I will never cease to exhort you and encourage you when I see that you are not making mistakes. That is why I am your true friend. Now, power action here now, word being flesh without start. I can only use words like word and flesh because they do come in the scriptures and they have a certain feel about them. But you see, this creative power in manifestation is enfleshing itself. Flesh, word being flesh without start, meaning a beginning, without end, but with finish, perfection. Like the when we talk of the finished product, we mean this is not only completed, but it has finish to it. It's such a thing of beauty. Perfect. Its heartbeat, you see how we have to use all our physical terms? Its heartbeat is love. Its brain is wisdom. This love, this wisdom is quite nondescript, indefinable, illimitable. It is creative energy in one or other archetypal form of manifestation, of activity. That is what this love and wisdom is. We can never apply our criteria to understand these things. That is why philosophical discourses are about this, theologies which are built up on a logical foundation, are hopeless. They can be less misleading than the previous theologian stuff, but that's about all they can do. You have to be alive to this. Don't ask, how do I become alive to it? Here and now, as you sit, you are alive. You don't ask me, how am I to be alive? You are alive. I can't tell you how to be alive. Nobody else can. It's like that. Can you feel the nature of this ultimate, this total reality, this transcendent actuality? Let the whole organism be quiet. Don't try to get hold of it. You will get hold of nothing. But if you try to get hold and you think you've got hold of something, you'll only have got hold of an illusion. Just be quiet. It is totality, it is transcendence which does all the doing. I have to be quiet and let it happen. Can I make the sun rise earlier because I'd like to see it rise up an hour earlier? Read your book of Job and see what wonderful things are said there. I can't do anything. I must be quiet. Otherwise I'm obtruding upon transcendence. I'm a blockhead, a solid blockhead, preventing the light of transcendence from just flowing through quite easily. And insofar as I do that, I am not man. Transcendence thinking. All right? You see the implications of even three or four sentences in the scriptures. Man, male, female, the celestial co-equal is the thought not in our sense but in that sense of creative energy, is the thought, the living, I put here image, I should have written likeness, but see this was written some years ago. The fair form of perfect measure of transcendence. This man, the thought in the mind of God, is the fair form of perfect measure. You know the phrase, man is the measure of all things. This is what it means. This is the sort of thing that it means, of the transcendence. That man is the measure of all creation. This man here, the psychophysical creature, male and female, the earth child, in his holy state, is the integration of seer and lord and producer and worker. And he can measure all things rightly in his holy state. In his worldly state, he is in confusion and conflict, the generator of sin, the agent of evil, the victim of sorrow. And he measures all things falsely. Because he, the limited creature, is trying to measure the infinite and the illimitable. But if he lets the infinite and illimitable, because he has become utterly pure and quiet, enters the stillness and the silence, then he in his holy state measures all things rightly. In his holy state, in communion, this man is that man. My goodness, on that sentence alone one could spend days working out all the implications of it. I think we better stop there today. I wanted to deal a little more with that, but we'll stop.